Chapter 10. The consequences, that I saw this woman, this mother of the boys, eating jam with a spoon out of Master Wiggins' trunk in the box room. And of this, I am ready to take an affidavit any day. A tragedy. The drama ought to be represented in about six acts. The school is hushed. Lawrence the prefect, and Custos of the Rods, is marching after the doctor into the operating room. Master Backhouse is about to follow.
Master Backhouse. It's all very well, but you see, if I don't pay you out after school you sneak you.
Master Lurcher. If you do I'll tell again.
Exit Backhouse. The Rod is heard from the adjoining apartment. Wish 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 wish. Re-enter Backhouse. Briggs and Luck. Enter the knife boy. Hamper for Briggs's. Master Brown.
Hooray, Tom Briggs.
I'll lend you my knife. If this story does not carry its own moral, what fable does, I wonder? Before the arrival of that hamper, Master Briggs was in no better repute than any other young gentleman of the lower school, and in fact I had occasion myself, only lately, to correct Master Brown for kicking his friend's shins during the writing lesson. But how this basket, directed by his mother's housekeeper and marked lass with care, whence I conclude that it contained some jam and some bottles of wine, probably, as well as the usual cake and game pie, and half a sovereign for the elder Master B, and 5 new shillings for Master Decimus Briggs.
How, I say, the arrival of this basket alters all Master Briggs' circumstances in life, and the estimation in which many persons regard him. If he is a good-hearted boy, as I have reason to think, the very first thing he will do, before inspecting the contents of the hamper, or cutting into them with the knife which Master Brown has so considerately lent him, will be to read over the letter from home which lies on the top of the parcel. He does so, as I remarked to Miss Raby, for whom I happened to be mending pens, when the little circumstance arose, with a flushed face and winking eyes. Look how the other boys are peering into the basket as he reads. I say to her, isn't it a pretty picture? Part of the letter is in a very large hand. This is from his little sister. And I would wager that she netted the little purse which he has just taken out of it, and which Master Lynx is eyeing. You are a droll man, and remark all sorts of queer things, Miss Raby says, smiling, and plying her swift needle and fingers as quick as possible. I am glad we are both on the spot, and that the little fellow lies under our guns as it were, and so is protected from some such brutal school pirate as young Duval, for instance, who would rob him, probably, of some of those good things, good in themselves, and better because fresh from home. See, there is a pie, as I said, and which I dare say, is better than those which are served at our table,
but you never take any notice of such kind of things, Miss Raby.
A cake, of course, a bottle of currant wine, jam pots, and no end of pears in the straw. With their money little Briggs will be able to pay the tick which that imprudent child has run up with Mrs. Ruggles, and I shall let Briggs Major pay for the pencil case which Bullock sold to him. It will be a lesson to the young prodigal for the future. But, I say, what a change there will be in his life for some time to come, and at least until his present wealth is spent. The boys who bully him will mollify towards him, and accept his pie and sweetmeats. They will have feasts in the bedroom, and that wine will taste more delicious to them than the best out of the doctor's cellar. The cronies will be invited. Young Master Wag will tell his most dreadful story, and sing his best song for a slice of that pie. What a jolly night they will have. When we go the rounds at night, Mr. Prince and I will take care to make a noise, before we come to Briggs' room, so that the boys may have time to put the light out, to push the things away, and to scud into bed. Dr. Spry may be put in requisition the next morning. Nonsense, you absurd creature, cries out Miss Raby, laughing, and I lay down the 12th pen very nicely mended. Yes, after luxury comes the doctor, I say, after extravagance a hole in the breeches pocket. To judge from his disposition, Briggs Major will not be much better off a couple of days hence than he is now, and, if I am not mistaken, will end life a poor man. Brown will be kicking his shins before a week is over, depend upon it. There are boys and men of all sorts, miss. There are selfish sneaks who hoard until the store they daren't use grows moldy. There are spendthrifts who fling away, parasites who flatter, and lick its shoes, and snarling curs who hate and envy good fortune. I put down the last of the pens, brushing away with it the quill chips from her desk first, and she looked at me with a kind, wondering face. I brushed them away, clicked the penknife into my pocket, made her a bow, and walked off, for the bell was ringing for school. A young fellow who is pretty sure to succeed. If Master Briggs is destined in all probability to be a poor man, the chances are that Mr. Bullock will have a very different lot. He is a son of a partner of the eminent banking firm of Bullock and Hulker, Lombard Street, and very high in the upper school, quite out of my jurisdiction. Consequently, he writes the most beautiful current hand ever seen, and the way in which he mastered arithmetic,
going away into recondite and wonderful rules in the tutor's assistant, which some masters even dare not approach,
is described by the doctor in terms of admiration. He is Mr. Prince's best algebra pupil, and a very fair classic too, doing everything well for which he has a mind. He does not busy himself with the sports of his comrades, and holds a cricket bat no better than Miss Raby would. He employs the play hours in improving his mind, and reading the newspaper. He is a profound politician, and, it must be owned, on the liberal side. The elder boys despise him rather, and when Champion Major passes, he turns his head, and looks down. I don't like the expression of Bullock's narrow green eyes, as they follow the elder champion, who does not seem to know, or care how much the other hates him. No. Mr. Bullock, though perhaps the cleverest and most accomplished boy in the school, associates with the quite little boys when he is minded for society. To these he is quite affable, courteous, and winning. He never fagged or thrashed one of them. He has done the verses, and corrected the exercises of many, and many is the little lad to whom he has lent a little money. It is true he charges at the rate of a penny a week for every sixpence lent out, but many a fellow to whom tarts are a present necessity is happy to pay this interest for the loan. These transactions are kept secret. Mr. Bullock, in rather a whining tone, when he takes Master Green aside, and does the requisite business for him, says, "You know you'll go, and talk about it everywhere. I don't want to lend you the money, I want to buy something with it. It's only to oblige you, and yet I am sure you will go, and make fun of me." Whereon, of course, Green, eager for the money, vows solemnly that the transaction shall be confidential, and only speaks when the payment of the interest becomes oppressive. Thus it is that Mr. Bullock's practices are at all known. At a very early period, indeed, his commercial genius manifested itself, and by happy speculations in toffee, by composing a sweet drink made of stick liquorice and brown sugar, and selling it at a profit to the younger children, by purchasing a series of novels, which he let out at an adequate remuneration, by doing boys' exercises for a penny, and other processes, he showed the bent of his mind. At the end of the half year he always went home richer than when he arrived at school, with his purse full of money. Nobody knows how much he brought, but the accounts are fabulous. 20, 30, 50, it is impossible to say how many sovereigns. When joked about his money, he turns pale, and swears he has not a shilling. Whereas he has had a banker's account ever since he was 13. At the present moment he is employed in negotiating the sale of a knife with Master Green, and is pointing out to the latter the beauty of the six blades, and that he need not pay until after the holidays. Champion Major has sworn that he will break every bone in his skin the next time that he cheats a little boy, and is bearing down upon him. Let us come away. It is frightful to see that big, peaceful, clever coward moaning under well-deserved blows and whining for mercy. Duval the pirate.
Jones mini mus passes, laden with tarts.
Duval.
Hello.
You small boy with the tarts.
Come here, sir.
Jones mini mus.
Please,
Duval, they ain't mine.
Duval.
Oh, you abominable young storyteller.
He confiscates the goods. I think I like young Duval's mode of levying contributions better than Bullock's. The former's, at least, has the merit of more candor. Duval is the pirate of birches, and lies in wait for small boys laden with money or provender. He scents plunder from afar off, and pounces out on it. Woe betide the little fellow when Duval boards him. There was a youth here whose money I used to keep, as he was of an extravagant and weak taste, and I doled it out to him in weekly shillings, sufficient for the purchase of the necessary tarts. This boy came to me one day for half a sovereign, for a very particular purpose, he said. I afterwards found he wanted to lend the money to Duval. The young ogre burst out laughing, when in a great wrath and fury I ordered him to refund to the little boy, and proposed a bill of exchange at 3 months. It is true Duval's father does not pay the doctor, and the lad never has a shilling, save that which he levies, and though he is always bragging about the splendor of Freeney's Town, Company Cork, and the foxhounds his father keeps, and the claret they drink there comes no remittance from Castle Freeney in these bad times to the honest doctor, who is a kindly man enough, and never yet turned an insolvent boy out of doors. The dormitories. Master Hewlett and Master Nightingale, rather a cold winter night. Hewlett flinging a shoe at Master Nightingale's bed, with which he hits that young gentleman.
Hello, you. Get up and bring me that shoe.
Nightingale.
Yes, Hewlett.
He gets up.
Hewlett. Don't drop it, and be very careful of it, sir.
Nightingale.
Yes, Hewlett.
Hewlett.
Silence in the dormitory. Any boy who opens his mouth, I'll murder him.
Now, sir, are not you the boy what can sing?
Nightingale.
Yes, Hewlett.
Hewlett.
Chant, then, till I go to sleep, and if I wake when you stop, you'll have this at your head.
Master Hewlett lays his bludgers on the bed, ready to shy at Master Nightingale's head in the case contemplated.
Nightingale,
timidly,
please, Hewlett.
Hewlett.
Well, sir?
Nightingale.
May I put on my trousers, please?
Hewlett.
No, sir.
Go on, or I'll...
Nightingale.
Row pleasures and palaces, though we may roam, be it ever so humble, there's no place like home.
A capture and a rescue.
My young friend, Patrick Champion, George's younger brother, is a late arrival among us, has much of the family quality and good nature, is not in the least a tyrant to the small boys, but is as eager as Amadeus to fight. He is boxing his way up the school, emulating his great brother. He fixes his eye on a boy above him in strength or size, and you hear somehow that a difference has arisen between them at football, and they have their coats off presently. He has thrashed himself over the heads of many youths in this manner. For instance, if Champion can lick Dobson, who can thrash Hobson, how much more, then, can he thrash Hobson? Thus he works up and establishes his position in the school. Nor does Mr. Prince think it advisable that we ushers should walk much in the way when these little differences are being settled, unless there is some gross disparity or danger is apprehended. For instance, I own to having seen this row as I was shaving at my bedroom window. I did not hasten down to prevent its consequences. Fogel had confiscated a top, the property of Snivens, the which, as the little wretch was always pegging it at my toes, I did not regret. Snivens whimpered, and young Champion came up, lusting for battle. Directly he made out Fogel, he steered for him, pulling up his coat sleeves, and clearing for action. Who spoke to you, young Champion? Fogel said, and he flung down the top to Master Snivens. I knew there would be no fight, and perhaps Champion too was disappointed. The garden, where the parlor borders go. Noblemen have been rather scarce at birches, but the heir of a great prince has been living with the doctor for some years. He is Lord George Gaunt's eldest son, the noble Plantagenet Gaunt, a nephew of the most honorable the Marquis of Stang. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.